Welcome to another episode of Journeys in Entrepreneurship. Today, we have Ndidi Wuneli, who is a well-known social entrepreneur in the African agriculture and nutrition, philanthropy, and social innovation space. She has over 25 years of international development experience and is a recognized serial entrepreneur, author, public speaker, and consultant. In 2010, she co-founded Sahel Consulting Agriculture and Nutrition Limited, a management consulting firm committed to transforming Africa's agriculture and nutrition landscape. She also founded Ace Foods, which was established with the mission to provide nutritious and tasty foods made from the best of West Africa's cereals, grains, herbs, and vegetables. Interviewing now on this episode is Fate alumni member Riches Atai. Riches graduated from the Orange Corners Incubation Program Cohort 4, and is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Winage Farms. Winage Farms is one of the leading digital agricultural platforms in Nigeria, using artificial intelligence to help rural smallholder farmers create a credit rating using their harvested produce. Winage has impacted the lives of over 20,000 smallholder farmers across 8 states since they were founded in 2018. Join us as we listen to their journey's entrepreneurship in the agribusiness and the social entrepreneurship space.
Hello, I'm Riches Atai, the co-founder and CEO of Winage Farms. But today we're focused on the highly esteemed Mrs. Ndidi Wuneli. Thank you so much for having us, Ma.
Oh, thank you for being here. Great to meet you.
Ma, you speak so much about social innovation at scale that is so highly contagious. And not only do you speak about it, you are at the forefront creating solutions around it, first from Leap Africa to Ace Foods to Sahel Consulting. So my first question is, why social innovation? Why social entrepreneurship?
Well, when you think about our country, Nigeria, and our continent, Africa, we really have tremendous challenges. And those challenges are viewed as some as intractable and others as opportunities. Right? And a social innovator is someone who sees problems but comes up with innovative solutions to solve those problems. Now, in our context, Lagos is going to have 50 million people by 2050. Nigeria is going to have 450 million. We cannot do anything unless it's at scale. In terms of education, water, hygiene, sanitation. And so when I think about individuals who are committed to solving social problems at scale, we call them social innovators. And I believe those people are amongst us, young people, dynamic entrepreneurs who need to be empowered, encouraged, and supported to see those problems as opportunities and to come up with creative approaches to addressing them.
Thank you so much, Ma. This leads me to my next question. I was in Ibadan, I think it was in 2019. And we had a project ongoing there. And I stumbled on your Ace Foods product, which is the powdered ginger. And I then went somewhere to have amala. And then there I saw the pack for the powdered bean. And as an entrepreneur myself, I know it's so challenging to have your product across several states in Nigeria. So the question is, what has been the challenges in having to scale your product, across several states in Nigeria?
So Ace Foods is a social enterprise, right? We saw a problem, high rates of malnutrition, high rates of post-harvest losses with 40 to 60% of our fruits and vegetables going to waste. And Nigeria being a net importer of food. So we decided to source locally, process for the local market, and prove that we could solve these challenges around malnutrition and post-harvest losses. It's been extremely challenging. Number one, building a supply chain. We work with about 10,000 farmers, getting their produce to our factory in Sangota. But the biggest challenge has actually been what you talked about, distribution. Now, many multinationals in our country have spent 100 years building the distribution channels that SMEs such as Ace Foods are trying to build. Finding reliable distributors and wholesalers, identifying individuals who are willing to take a risk on a new product where, there's no $1 trillion budget to support ad spending and marketing and billboards and jingles. So you're basically starting with grassroots mobilization, finding individuals who are willing to take a risk on you, training them, supporting them, and encouraging. We even have a program called Our Mama, where we give women starter packs and training so they can become our distributors, and then we grow with them. And it's challenging, but exciting at the same time. The fact that you sell products in Ibadan gives me so much joy. When I go to my friends' homes and I open their cabinets and I see our spices, or they, you know, proudly show me that they bought our spices, I'm so excited. And my kids are the number one investigators. When we're invited for dinner at people's houses, they want to know, do you use a spice? So the challenge for building this distribution network is immense. Because we don't have formal systems and structures in our country where you have, you know, established merchandising networks and established distributor networks. And so we're having to build those. And now Ace Foods is almost 12 years old. We thank God for the progress we've made, but it's not been easy at all.
Thank you so much, Ma. I mean, this is highly educational, inspiring to say the least. This also leads me to the next question. You are at the forefront of, you know, solving problems around hunger, poverty for the smallholder farmers who have been highly marginalized. And Ace Foods is doing that, you know, very well with the fact that they source their produce locally from smallholder farmers. I read a report some time ago that majority of goods produced in Nigeria are not exportable because of, you know, the inputs residues, the fertilizer residues that are left on the produce. Now, for Ace Foods, sourcing this produce from the smallholder farmers, what has been the challenge around educating the farmers? Because, I mean, the farmers are in the informal sector. Has there been challenges around educating the farmers on how to, you know, utilize the best agronomic practices? And how have you been able to scale this to over 10,000 farmers that you work with?
It hasn't been easy. Number one, we don't have any databases where you can say, I want a ginger farmer in Jigawa and 200 names will pop up. So we've actually had to work with NGOs, community organizations to find these farmers. We've put them into clusters, and the cluster method allows us to train them. So when you have 50 farmers in one community, then you can actually go into that community and do training. So we've done everything from training on how you dry spices and maize, how you avoid aflatoxin, because we have aflatoxin, as you know, in some of our grains in Nigeria, which is carcinogenic. We've partnered with IITA to ensure that our farmers use aflasafe seeds and aflasafe methodology. We've also partnered with a range of organizations to give pigs bags to our farmers. So when they have harvested the grains, they can store them in these special bags, which keep the weevils out, but also avoid what you've talked about, which is the residue, but also people put in very dangerous chemicals into bags to keep away the weevils, which also kills people. So teaching them about harvesting, production, processing, and ensuring that as they're growing, they're improving their livelihoods. As we're growing, they're growing. That mutually beneficial relationship is critical. We've partnered with LAPU to give them microfinance so that they have funds at the beginning of the planting season. All of these incentives allow them to change their mindset. And farmers are businessmen and women at the end of the day. So if you show them that you're going to be a consistent customer, you're going to be a loyal customer, and you're going to improve their lives, they will change behavior. It's not easy, but it's working. And it's a slow and steady process. And so we're doing that across the board. And we currently source about 20 value chains from farmers across Nigeria. And thankfully, we've gotten a lot of support from development partners as well, like AACF, Innovations Against Poverty, lots of different development partners who have come in to say, we're going to fund some components of your farmer engagement. And that's been very meaningful for us.
Thank you so much, Ma. Having heard you speak about this process, the process can only work when there's a proper structure put in place. Lots of entrepreneurs building startups across, you know, Nigeria, even at the world at large. One challenge they have had has been around setting up the structure to be able to, especially when you're building a solution that will be scalable across the world, is to set the structure that will be able to carry the solution at scale. Ma, how have you at Ace Foods been able to build that structure in terms of sourcing for the right talent, and or how has it been in building this talent? How do you identify the talents, you know, to have them come join the structure?
Since my days at Faith Foundation, when I was a Pioneer ED, until today, for every organization I've started, the first thing is you need a strong board of directors. ACE is blessed with a strong board of directors, so is Leap Africa, so is Sahel Consulting. Everything I've started, it starts with governance. Who is on your board? A lot of entrepreneurs tell me, oh, I don't have strong board members. I don't know who to invite to my board. You need a strong board because they ensure these systems and structures you've discussed, but they also push you as an entrepreneur to infect the systems and structures, the boundaries and controls, your clear mission and vision, your values, and they hold you accountable. So that's one. It starts from the governance. Then beyond the governance, you as the founder, how are you building your own skills? I realize that so many entrepreneurs take it for granted that they have the skills to lead, they have the skills to inspire, they have the skills to attract. Many of us don't. We have to build the skills. We have to work on ourselves on a daily basis. Every entrepreneur should commit to a life of learning. And then once you've done that, you have to then decide, who are you attracting to your organization? And I read a book once that really blew my mind. Just three simple things you look for in every staff. Hunger. Not hunger like for food, like physical food. Hunger for a drive for life. What do you want to achieve in life? Second is humility. And trust me, to work in agriculture and food, if you're not humble, you will not be able to survive in this sector. You know, when we started, we used to go to mile 12. I lost shoes in mile 12. If you think you're too big to do that type of work, you can't be in food and agriculture, right? So humility is critical. And it doesn't matter what your role is in the organization, you have to be able to do what it takes to get that organization moving forward from an ethical perspective. And the third one is emotional intelligence. Can you interact with people? Can you read people? Can you engage with people? And those three are more than all the skills in the world. I don't hire for skills anymore. Skills can be learned. But what we call soft skills are even more important than hard skills. Now, if you have people who have those three qualities, mission-driven high achievers, they will stay in your organization and they help you build it. You also need to put in place financial systems, human resource management systems, operating systems, do's and don'ts, all of that. But having the right people who come with you on this journey is critical. And I'll tell you, ACE Foods, I don't run ACE Foods day to day. I haven't run ACE Foods since, I don't even go to, this year I've been to the factory maybe two or three times. I'm going tomorrow and they're excited. We have a young team. Our managing director is Temi Jeputu. He's been with us for 7 years. And we have over 100 staff. They're committed, they're dedicated. Some of them have shares, some of them sit on the board. And having an organization where you have team members who believe that this organization is theirs, they run it as if it's their own, that changes everything.
Interesting. I mean, my words fail me to express how much I've learned in this, just in this few conversations. I was privileged, and it's also important that I mention that having been amongst the first ED in Faith Foundation, I mean, I benefited from the Orange Corners program here, handled by Faith Foundation. So thank you once again, Ma. I was also privileged to attend the Union 100, where you spoke. That was some 3-4 years ago. And there were some staggering numbers you gave. Like I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, that you speak with so much passion and desire that is tangible. Anyone who hears you speak about, you know, social entrepreneurship, agriculture, cannot leave the room without wanting to even do much more. And some of the numbers you gave was that over 90% of food that we consume, of processed food that we consume in Nigeria, are imported. And this is really worrisome because Nigeria has, you know, the capacity to grow our food and process the food. So this leads me to the next question of, what are the opportunities in the sector that are yet to be untapped? Because I know there are, you see from the eagle view, so young entrepreneurs who are coming into this space are seeking to, okay, what part of the value chain should I get into? So what opportunities are there that are yet to be untapped, please?
It's So this year, I released a new book called Food Entrepreneurs in Africa, Scaling Resilient Agriculture Businesses. And everybody should get a copy of that book. But in the book, I actually lay out what it takes to enter the sector and to achieve success. I interviewed 80 entrepreneurs across Africa who are scaling. And I wanted to mention that because it's not just about what products or services you should enter, and I'll address that, but it's also what business model you have. So the first question, why are opportunities? Opportunities are everywhere, everywhere. And in the Nigerian context, with the devaluation we've experienced in the last 1 year, everything that's imported today has doubled in price, right? And so they've become uncompetitive. And the average Nigerian cannot afford them anymore. And that Nigerian is looking for a local alternative. So I would suggest to you that everything we import historically should be produced locally. So I'll use a perfect example, dairy. So in Nigeria, what are the dairy products we consume that are imported? Milk, cheese, butter, ice cream, right? At least 4 and 5 yogurts. So at Sahel Consulting, we run a program called Advancing Local Dairy Development in Nigeria. And this program is focused on helping local dairy processors source milk locally and transform the sector. So we're putting communities into clusters, these farmers into clusters, farmers that historically would be traveling around Nigeria to get milk. We're providing them with feed and fodder so they don't have to graze their cows in other people's farms, training on hygienic milk practices, access to financial inclusion and financial literacy so they have bank accounts. And then we're linking them with milk processors who can every day buy fresh milk from these communities. It's a phenomenal program. There are solar-powered boreholes, so they have water for their cows. And there's vet care, vaccination for their cows, etc. And we're working with 5 milk processors in Plateau State, Adamawa, Kaduna, Kano. And you're amazed at what these farmers are able to do and the progress that we're seeing. And that's just one opportunity, right? Dairy in Nigeria. Because Nigeria imports over $1 billion worth of powdered milk. And yet, we have the 4th largest cattle herd in Africa. Why shouldn't we be able to source milk locally? And I'm so excited about the interest in the dairy sector and the opportunities that we have in this country to unlock opportunities in the dairy sector. So entrepreneurs who are interested in dairy don't all have to become producers of cheese or butter. They can be providers of feed and fodder. If you go to Europe, you'll see people selling hay, stacks of hay. We need to be able to sell hay and silage so that in the dry season, our cattle, our goats, all our small ruminants have access to feed. So you can become an entrepreneur just mixed feed. You can become an entrepreneur that provides vet care. You don't have to be a veterinary doctor to sell medicine for cows, right? You can become an entrepreneur that provides artificial insemination services so that our cows can become more productive. And so when we think about the dairy sector, it's amazing how many untapped opportunities exist. And because Nigerians don't know about this, international organizations are coming in here to take opportunities in the dairy sector because they see a huge drive and a whole huge move for import substitution in dairy. That same requirement across the board presents opportunities. But then the second thing is I talked about a model. So in my book, I have 6 key components for business models that scale and succeed. The first is that your business model has to be demand-driven. Many entrepreneurs in food and agriculture, but in every sector, say, oh, I think I like it, so everybody should. So when we started Ace Foods, we started making jams. I love jam. Did you eat jam for breakfast today? The average Nigerian doesn't have jam in their fridge. I have 4 types of jam in my fridge. I learned how to make papaya jam, that's pawpaw jam, abalumo jam, pineapple jam. All sorts of jam. Because I told you 40 to 60% of our fruits and vegetables go to waste. The first thing you can do is jams. So we start making jams. We won a business plan competition based on our jams. And the average Nigerian said, what is this thing? Why is it not red? They said, the only one I know is strawberry jam. So we had to evolve and we got a NAFDAC number for a mixed fruit jam that was colored red with different types of fruit. And then we realized we were not competitive because the average jam in Nigeria has no fruit. And so imagine me wanting to make a healthy food that has no fruit, that's just sugar and water and flavoring, right? And then glass wasn't available. And then Dangote and others doubled the price of sugar. So our product was uncompetitive. 1 year of trying to make jams, we quickly had to pivot. Your product has to be demand-driven with measurable value addition to the consumers. That's number one. Number two, it has to be cost-efficient and cost-effective, right? If it's not, it's not going to be appealing to anybody. And right now, what's the price point for food in Nigeria? The average consumer looks at what, 50 naira? The price of an egg, the price of Indomie, 50 naira. If your food product is above 50 naira, people are going to sweat before they buy it. So 100 naira, can you sell something for 1,000 naira to the average Nigerian? Will they buy it every day? They won't. So that price point, that cost efficiency, systems and structures help you to drive that. Three, it has to shape the ecosystem. You can't wake up and say you're going to produce something in the dairy sector and the cassava sector without looking at policy, without looking at the enabling environment. So look at the policy, shape the ecosystem. Don't wait for it to happen to you. Shape it. Four, you have to tell your story. You have to brand yourself from your name to your brand promise to how you amplify your voice. So many entrepreneurs think, oh, my product is good, it will sell itself. No, you have to tell your story. And you have to make sure, and the most important is that your business is resilient and can adapt to climate change, can adapt to COVID and other shocks, because there were so many shocks. How resilient is your business? And how do you build resilience into your DNA? So I capture all of this in the book because I realize it's not just enough to have a good idea. If you don't have all these components, your business will be dead on the water. And that's why so many businesses fail in the first few years. So if you want to avoid that, make sure that your business is resilient, it's demand-driven, it's simple with compelling branding, clear systems and structures, leverages technology and innovation. You have to leverage technology, data and innovation. That's the sixth point, and that's really, really critical. And with all of this, you're up for success in every sector, especially the food and agriculture sector.
Thank you so much, Ma. This is inspiring. Just while you were speaking, you spoke around, you know, having to engage the government in terms of regulation. In the food and ag sector, especially startups who are leveraging on technology to build even more solutions. Now, how have you been able to, you know, engage the government? Because largely what has been almost prevalent in recent times has been that the government creates laws, regulations without even engaging the players in the sector to know what is suitable and what can work, right? How has it been, you know, working around, navigating around the regulatory systems in the food and ag sector, Ma?
I think every entrepreneur owes it to themselves to map out who the ecosystem players are in their sector. In ag, it's not just the federal government, right? It's just local government, state government, traditional rulers, community groups. So you actually do what we call an ecosystem map. Who are the power brokers? Who are the influencers? What needs to be influenced? And this is important. It's really, really important. The second thing beyond mapping is to then figure out how to engage them. Who can become your champions? Who can become your biggest advocates? Every politician wants to be made a winner. They want to be celebrated for their successes. So how do you engage with them? From a point of integrity where you're also engaging with them to celebrate your successes. Many young entrepreneurs feel like they have no power. And I tell them there are many organizations right now in Nigeria. And all of us have to belong to one. So is it the Manufacturers Association of Nigeria? If that's too big for you, then what about NASIMA? What about NASMI? What about even the Value Chain Association, the Cassava Growers Association, the Poultry Farmers Association? Are you part of any association? If not, you should join them. And when you join them, because you're intelligent, you're hardworking, you're committed, you can become a vocal person in that association. And they'll be the ones calling you and you saying, oh, we've been invited for this conference. Can you go? Please help us write a paper on this. When I first came back to Nigeria, I joined the Nigerian Economic Summit as a volunteer. And I joined the SME Policy Working Group. And that was over 20 years ago. And today I'm on the board of the NESG. I feel like there are lots of opportunities to shape policy. NESG is one avenue. There are so many others. You have to get involved in them. But don't take it for granted, right, that it's just the federal level. There are power brokers in the state level, and there are policies that are unique to states and at the local level that you can shape. And so definitely get involved in all aspects of shaping them and partner with others. There's power in numbers. Even just the FATE Alumni Association is a force, right? If the FATE Alumni Association has an opinion on VAT, how is that being put out in the public domain, right? So I believe we don't leverage our power in numbers, our power to write, our power to influence. During COVID-19, I started writing. In March last year, I wrote an article. When everybody was still doubting COVID, I said, how do we ensure that hunger doesn't kill more people than COVID-19? And I started sending it to everybody. I wrote it, it was published in Business Day, but then I sent it to people, I sent it to governors, I sent people I knew who knew people. I don't know everybody, but let me send it to someone who knows somebody. 6 degrees of separation. Then they start calling me saying, you know, if we do a lockdown, actually, we should consider those who are selling food. At first, they weren't. I said, food people are essential, though. They were only going to have essential workers be the doctors and nurses. I said, no. You cannot. Farmers are essential workers. Our farmers need to get to the farm. So they had to issue letters for farmers to get to the farm. We still had so much waste. Food prices doubled, and we still have double-digit inflation in food in this country. And that was also because in some contexts, we weren't fast enough. So I think we owe it to ourselves to get involved in shaping policy. And my next book is actually on this topic, how SMEs can shape policy. Because I believe many of us don't recognize the power we have.
Thank you so much, Ma. Not only have you been able to build solutions, one thing that you've also done, you've created a platform for young entrepreneurs to be able to grow their solutions as well. Sahel Capital provides SME private equity. Ma, would you kindly share more light as to how, you know, startup founders who are creating solutions but still at the low level, not yet at scale, but their solutions are highly scalable, how they can take advantage of or partner with Sahel Capital to be able to grow their solutions, you know, across Nigeria and then Africa?
So Sahel Capital is our sister company. They're actually next door, and they manage the fund for agricultural financing in Nigeria, which is a private equity fund. Many startups cannot access private equity. That's just the sad reality. In my book, I have a whole chapter on financing, and I say that for startups, it's friends and family, it's venture capital, challenge funds, angel investors, impact funds, crowdfunding, but there are at least 20 financing options for startups, right? At least 20. Now, it's important that you're very careful about what is appropriate financing and affordable financing. Not all financing is appropriate or affordable. What do I mean by appropriate? Your startup, less than 3 years old, 5 years old, you need financing that is patient, because you're not going to make money overnight. If you have financing that's not patient, that wants you to turn around a payback in 12 months at an exorbitant interest rate, that puts tremendous pressure on you and you can't focus on what you're doing, which is starting and growing your business. So you need patient capital. You need grants, right? You need, if it's venture capital, it has to be patient, which means they want their returns 5 to 7 years, or they're even willing to lose their returns as their risk they're taking with you, so that they're not putting pressure on you. So it has to be appropriate, and it has to be affordable, which means what is the cost of the financing. And many times people don't realize there's cost. Even when someone gives you a grant, there's cost, because you have to report on it, you have to deliver on some terms of the grant. So how expensive is it, and how do you weigh that versus the options you have? Now, we have a company called Nourishing Africa. I hope you've been on nourishingafrica.com. And Nourishing Africa is a platform I created last year to help entrepreneurs in the food and agriculture sector scale. It's a free website. It's DevEx, LinkedIn, and Facebook for ag and food entrepreneurs. So it has financing, it has data, it has training. And through Nourishing Africa, we're helping entrepreneurs now in 35 African countries. And on Nourishing Africa's website, you just search by Nigeria, search by cassava. You'll see everybody funding Nigeria and cassava. You know, whatever value chain you're in, search by country, you see about 20 pages of funding available to you. And what blows my mind is that many entrepreneurs don't know about these funding opportunities. And that's why the same people keep on getting prizes and awards and funding. And you're wondering, why are they getting it and I'm not? And it's because we're not informed. We're not aware. So please join the Nourishing Africa mailing list. Every day you'll receive, every week, alerts on funding. And we partner with Faith Foundation as well at Nourishing Africa. I think it's really important. I created that because I felt so many of us are working in isolation. And to grow your business, you need to scale. So finally, Sahel Capital is doing a fantastic job, but they're working with medium-sized businesses. So they invest $3 to $5 million. It's patient capital. We help you with TA, and I'm in the TA investment committee, not on the board. But we help you grow your business and then we exit. And it's done a fantastic job. They've invested in rice, in shea butter, in palm oil, in poultry, in dairy. And they're working across Nigeria, and their next future funds are going to be across Africa.
Right, thank you once again, Ma. I mean, you've shared so much insights to young entrepreneurs, but would there be a last word for, you know, entrepreneurs in the food and agri business, Ma?
I think this is an exciting time to be a food and ag entrepreneur in Africa. It's an exciting time. When we think about this $1 trillion industry that we haven't even tapped into, it just gives me so much hope. And young people are the lifeblood of this sector. They're the drivers of innovation, of change, of transformation. And so my one charge to young entrepreneurs is rise up and seize your space. Make your claim. This is your sector. You can do well and do good in the agriculture sector. You can make money and change lives in this sector. It's wide open for you. Wide open. So please step into your space, rise up, be resilient, be tough, be innovative, partner with others, and push forward. Don't stop. We look forward to celebrating your successes as you innovate, as you make us proud. My vision through Nourishing Africa and everything I've started is by 2050, Africa will be a net exporter of food, driven by our young, dynamic entrepreneurs who are leveraging ag tech and innovation to leapfrog and ensure that we can feed ourselves and feed the world. And I believe that our young people are going to make sure we achieve that vision in our lifetime. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us, Ma.
Thank you. My pleasure. And now you've asked me all these questions, it's my turn to ask you a few questions. So you're an ag and food entrepreneur as well.
Yes, Ma.
What keeps you going and keeps you excited about the opportunities in the sector?
Okay, first, I live with my grandparents sometime. And each time they had to sell their agro produce, they had a particular African phrase in their lips, which was monkey they work, baboon they chop. Then I didn't know what it meant. But having started Winich Farms, we identified two major problems that smallholder farmer faces. One is the poor access to market, fair market. The other is poor access to financially inclusive services like credit. So what we did at Winich Farms was leverage on technology, connect the smallholder farmers directly to market, build them a profile in this process, which allows them access financially inclusive services. So basically what keeps us going is to, like we oftentimes say in Winich Farms is more than just a business, but it's a cause at heart to improve the lives of smallholder farmers who have been largely marginalized.
Fantastic, I'm so proud of you.
Thank you so much.
So you're inspired by your grandparents and now you're inspiring future generations. Well, I wish you tremendous success. You can count on my support. Please join Nourishing Africa to get all the funding you need to scale your business. And we look forward to celebrating all of your successes in future years.
Thank you, Ma. Thank you so much for having us today.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Journeys in Entrepreneurship. This interview was recorded on the 14th of September, 2021. At the Sahel Consulting Head Office in Lagos. We look forward to hearing about your haha moments in the comment section below and invite you to join us next week Friday for a new episode.